Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Right now at Safeway, earn 4x rewards points when you shop for participating items with Safeway for You. Shop for items like Ready Whip whipped cream, Deer Park natural spring water, Dan and Danimals drinks, Philadelphia cream cheese, and 7-Up to earn 4x rewards points with Safeway for You. Offer expires January 4th. Plus, get select holiday essentials like gift wraps, bags, holiday decor, lights, and more. Buy one, get one 50% off. Restrictions apply. Promotions may vary. Visit Safeway.com or head in store for full offer details.
Well, Chris Hulsbeck, it's really great that you're here because I was musing about where we met before and I remembered the BAM Awards, which were in Cologne 12 years ago, which is a bit scary. And you performed live with Sound of Games on stage, which was a great honour to have you there. And I was host of that evening. So let's talk about your family. You were actually brought up in a musical family, in a sense. How was that? Because whenever I talk to people who are brought up in a musical family, I have this weird vision of the Waltons, you know, somehow sitting around a campfire, all playing music together, all sort of in harmony and everything. What was that like? And what sort of music were you surrounded by as a very young child?
Yeah, so my grandmother, she was a prolific piano teacher. That was her main job. And she had quite a status in town where people wanted their children to go and be taught by her. So we were surrounded by pianos. We had two. We had an upright and we had a grand piano in the house. An uncle played trumpet, and then there were some other things, but it wasn't like a guitar family. I would have probably become a rock star or something if there was a guitar in the house. But no, it was the piano. And from an early age, I started playing by hearing. And then at some point, they tried to teach me classical piano, but I didn't like it very much. I was maybe like 5 or 6 years old, and I held out for 2 years. But my grandma, she was a lovely lady, and I thank her for all her love and contributions. But when she was teaching piano, she could be a little bit old school, and she would hit her students with a stick on the fingers if we made mistakes. So I remember like a lot of students shed a lot of tears there. And so it wasn't quite for me. I knew that. But I got a little bit of the basics there, and then I developed a keen interest in electronic music. So I remember one of the first pieces that I really spoke to me was this popcorn piece, you know, this that song that ran in the radio in the 70s. And I was intrigued by that because it was a sound I had not been exposed to. And then I discovered like electronic bands like Kraftwerk and Tangerine Dream and Jean-Michel Jarre and Vangelis and all those electronic music greats. And that was the sound. Oh yeah, and Switched on Bach, Wendy Carlos album. So that was really something that fascinated me, that electronic sound. And so I try to aspire to that, and I wanted to do that in my future.
But okay, I'm going to take you back a bit because there's some things to unpack there. But the first of all, when you, in a sense, rejected the idea of playing the piano, what sort of reaction was to that, and what reaction came when you started, when your taste started to change, and you ended up sort of being into electronic music? Were the family, was it just a very open family, and they were very supportive of what your tastes and wishes were, or were they a family who actually wanted you to go on a path that they wanted, like a lot of families do?
No, I think they were overall pretty supportive. So they didn't like force me to anything. I just did those 2 years piano lessons, and then I said, you know, guys, this is not working for me. And they let it go. That was okay. I do remember, though, my grandma saying that I'm wasting my talents, because she saw something in me, and she wanted to nurture it, but she didn't pressure me too much. In fact, she was the one who helped me finally get a Commodore 64, which we're getting to. But that is, and I remember also, they at some point I wanted to learn the drums, because I had witnessed with another family member, this distant cousin, who had a drum set in his basement, and I was amazed by all the ruckus he could do with it, you know. And so I wanted to learn the drums. And then for my, I think it was my 11th birthday or something, they got me a drum kit. But unfortunately, it was a practice drum kit, which didn't make much sound. It didn't have the boomy drums or anything. It was more like you would hit the drum pads, and they would make like a pop sound, you know. And so that, again, I stuck with that maybe for a year, and then I said, this is also not for me. So they were very supportive, but it took me a while to really find my love and my passion for something, and I stuck with it.
You mentioned the track Popcorn, and that's quite interesting, because the sort of famous version of Popcorn is obviously slightly different to the George Kingsley version, which
exactly
came a few years before.
And so, I think I was just exposed to the hot butter popular version, and then much later discovered that it wasn't even written by them. But yeah, very, very important for my background.
And it's a really interesting, you know, the original version is really interesting because it's quite different from an album called Music to Moog By, and a whole sort of selection of early electronica, we could say, really, which is really great. Now, you mentioned Tangerine Dream, you mentioned Kraftwerk and Jean-Michel Jarre, and this was a period where music was really changing and developing. Were you sort of also finding, maybe this is a stronger word, but were you finding some form of community of friends because of this type of music? Were you amongst a group of friends who were really getting into that type of music? And particularly with, you know, Tangerine Dream and Kraftwerk, we have the connection to Germany. So they were, you know, from here.
Not many of my friends were sharing my passion for those bands. It was more like a little bit later, you know, like in school, you're exposed to pop music, and particularly Britpop was also a major influence on me. And then the whole new wave, which happened in Britain, and then there was also a German new wave, which was also fun. And then I have to admit, I was also a fan of Italo disco, which is kind of like the silly version of all that, but very synth heavy, and that was also appealing to me. So I was really into a lot of that stuff in addition to those synthesizer bands like Tangerine Dreams.
So can you tell me what really appealed to you from the, you know, the synthesizer? What appealed to you about it?
It was this raw sound that was totally different from an acoustic instrument. You know, you could shape it with a filter, and and those things, and those, yeah, they were just otherworldly, kind of something that was just different from my parents, what they liked to listen to. And it was just like going into pop music, that it shaped pop music at the time, particularly in the 80s, that electronic sound and the whole music production changed. And I can't quite explain it, but it was something that was very appealing to me.
Yeah, no, I think it's one of those defining moments in music that changes music, and it changes, it's a generational change, because somehow it represents the sound of the future. It's a cliche to say that with electronic music, but it did. It was, the sound of the future. And therefore, you are either young or old. If you're into it, you're the youth of the period. And so that's also part of, I think, the fascination of the whole thing. It was for me at that period, totally. At least. What was your first video game experience?
So video games came into my life probably at the end of the 70s in form of like a street fair was happening. And there was one of the booths had some video games set up on the street, and I had never seen one before. I was maybe like 8-9 years old, and this was fascinating. So it was like Space Invaders, that kind of stuff, very very early video games. I think it was slightly past the Pong era, but it was still very basic, monochrome displays, that kind of thing. There was also one where you were throwing bombs from a blimp into a valley and things like that. So very, very simple early arcade video games. And I was hooked.
Can you explain why you were hooked?
Well, I think these games, particularly when they were brand new and you're a young person, they're very addictive. There's a fascination there whenever you like grow up, video games have a strong pull. I remember then the first arcade machines appearing in like some areas in town, in some restaurants had it, and some other places, the movie theater had a machine, and then we were always like looking for the next cool machine that was brand new, and a lot of money went into those. I think I sometimes skipped my lunch bread just so I could save that the few bucks, put them in the arcade machine.
Yeah, I remember myself being, I'm older than you, so I was at university, and instead of actually studying with a friend who was doing the same course, we would spend our whole time playing against each other, with the idea of whoever would win would get the best degree. And of course, at the end of it, neither of us did.
Well, of course, that was a great idea, yeah.
Exactly. You mentioned the Commodore 64 and that your grandmother helped you out. Can you explain why you wanted to get that piece of equipment, and also, yeah, how it changed your life, I suppose.
So going back to my wish of owning a synthesizer and making synthesizer music just like Tangerine Dream or Jean-Michel Jarre, my family wasn't that wealthy, and those machines were very, very expensive. I think like a basic synth would start at like 1500 Deutschmarks, and the better ones, there were several thousand, and that was just not in the cards for us. So a few years passed, and then I saw an ad in a magazine about the Commodore 64 computer, and that it had a real synthesizer sound chip. And that, my mind really then at that time, I was maybe like 13 or 14, was like, here's my chance, you know, this relatively affordable home computer has this synthesizer sound chip. And I went over all the specs that it had, like waveforms and filter and all that stuff. Never mind that it was still very basic compared to a professional synthesizer. But for me, that was like, I could do music like Tangerine Dream with that Commodore 64. That was my thought about it. A little bit naive, but okay, we're getting to that later. But I saved up money. I dropped newspapers in all over town, saved up some money. And I had like, I think I had $300 and the Commodore was $400. And I almost bought an Atari XL, which has a shitty sound chip, you know. So because that was in my price range, and my grandma saw that and she gave me the rest of the money so I could buy a Commodore 64, which I really wanted. She knew.
Did it become learning by doing, or did you actually have someone around you who could really teach you how to use it?
No, that was the next step in the whole thing. I brought that machine home and I switched it on. And it's not like a computer nowadays or an iPad or something where you have like hundreds of programs and apps that do great music stuff. There was nothing. And I was sitting in front of that. Yeah, what now? You know, oh, there's a handbook. You have to learn programming this thing. You know, I thought like I'm going to turn it on and make music with it. It wasn't that easy. So in the first year, I was just playing video games with it. Even though I told my family I also use it for school. Yeah, right. So I was just playing video games. But there were some games that had some great soundtracks in it. So I thought like, okay, my focus shifted slightly. I thought like I have to learn programming. I was into video games. Music was also a passion. So I thought like maybe I'll design my own video games. And I started with that and pretty quickly found out that like the basic programming language that came with the computer was too slow. It was called BASIC. And that is probably because it is pretty basic. And so I had to learn machine language. So assembly, programming the CPU of the computer with the building blocks that had. And I was amazed how fast that was. Once I got into it, I really thought like, okay, now I can actually apply what I learned here, particularly because I wasn't very good in designing or programming games. But a friend of mine, he was actually pretty good and he had already sold a game to a company, but he wasn't good with sound. So I figured, okay, let's apply what I learned with my passion of music and program the SID chip. That was the sound chip in the Commodore 64. And lo and behold, after 2 weeks, I had something presentable and he was already working on the second game. And I went to him and played him that piece of music and his jaw dropped. He was like, okay, I want to use that music for my game. And so that was my first game music. That game was called Planet of War and pretty basic shoot 'em up game. But it had pretty cool technology and it had my soundtrack in it.
And how old were you at the time?
I think I was 16.
So what did school mean to you then when you were doing things like this, which was obviously your passion and you were having to, you know, tell white lies to your parents about this was a school project? What was the importance of school at that time? Did it have any importance anymore?
It was never really important. I was one of those students who just got by, like, because I was pretty smart, I think. But I wasn't a hard worker in school. So my grades were like maybe just above average. I probably could have been much better if I applied myself more, but my passion was the Commodore 64 and all that stuff. And I was all self-taught with those things. And I pretty quickly realized that this is what I wanted to do with my life. So, but I was still in school at the time. I was in, I think, 11th grade when I did the game with my friend. And then shortly after, there was a magazine contest for Commodore 64 Music, where they said, like, hey, we have this contest. They paid some money for the first prize. And the and then there was also like if you reached any of the first 10 picked entries, you would get on the cover disc. And I thought, like, hey, I'm gonna apply to that contest, and programmed a new sound player for the SID chip that was much more sophisticated than the Planet of War music. And in a total overnighter, before the deadline of sending that piece in, I put together a demo piece for my new sound player, essentially just showing off all the features that I programmed in. And that became Shades, the music piece. I sent it in, or actually my aunt sent it in, because I had to go to school. And I told her, hey, you have to get this into the post office, because today is the deadline for this thing. And she did. And then a week later, I got a phone call, and to my absolute surprise, I won the contest in that magazine. So that was that piece, Shades, and that essentially really kickstarted my career.
Now, the Planet of War piece that you did for your friend's game, that game came out later. Was there a moment of disappointment in terms of that you'd made the music, and I presume the hope was that this was going to be on the market within about 24 hours? You know, I mean, you know how you feel when you've sort of created something, you want it out there immediately, and that didn't happen. Was there any moment of doubt or of apprehension of what you're doing, or was it something that you just sort of absolutely rocketed into with then Shades?
Exactly. So after Shades, I made a editor program called the Sound Monitor for the sister magazine of the C64. They had like two big magazines in Germany, and they had like the listing of the months feature, where you could type in all those numbers and then get like a program, because like the discs were not that common yet on magazines. That program then really opened things up to create a lot of music with the Commodore 64, also for other people. It essentially became also like the blueprint for later tracker programs. So with that under my belt, which happened just in the months after Shades, I actually called up different game companies, and one of them was Rainbow Arts, which was the biggest upcoming game developer in Germany. And I played them some tunes over the phone, and they said, we want to hire you right away, full time. And I said, I'm still in school here. I cannot do this right now. And then eventually they got me. I left school middle of 12th grade, and I never looked back. But because I didn't know I knew what I wanted to do at that time, but before, I wasn't sure what my career would be, or what I would study maybe at university. I was very worried about that. But once I had this into a paying job, and I saw a career developing, I knew exactly what I wanted to do. So I didn't even think about Planet of War anymore. It took a while for my friend to finish it and then get it sold. And in fact, it was published by a sub-label of Rainbow Arts. I think I may have even had a hand in it to bring the two together and have it published. But at that point, I didn't even care that the music was not perfect for that. I was already in the middle of making some new tracks for all the Rainbow Arts games.
I mean, what's fascinating there is that, you know, that you phone up Rainbow Arts, and there's this, I wouldn't call it the innocence of youth, but when we're young, we have this sort of fearlessness.
Yeah.
You know, and most people, when they think about something, they have this apprehension and then think, I can't possibly call the CEO of a company, you know, particularly when you're very young, but you can, and you can do it, and you did do it. Was there any apprehension or fear on your part, or were you a sort of fearless young man?
Oh my goodness, where do we start? I was probably, I had a lot of anxiety from my teenager years into much later in life. Even today, I still grapple with that. I'm still shocked that I was bold about this stuff, but I knew I had something, you know. So that gave me the confidence to call them up and forget all about the other anxieties I had in life. So I was very confident about my abilities there. So it didn't even register. I just thought like, oh, well, you know, they can't say more than no. You know, so I just called them up and say, hey, I have these tunes here. I think I'd like to work in games. If you have any games that need music, let me know. And after he heard it, he said, like, do you want to start here?
What's interesting as well is that at the beginning, I mentioned the BAM Awards, which was Computech and the CEO's Hans Ippisch. Mm-hmm.
The first game for Rainbow Arts I did was a Hans Ippisch game, a very famous one and infamous at that, because it was one of those games that was forbidden in Germany. It was like from the perspective of today, a very harmless shoot 'em up game, but because it was called Soldier and it had like the connotation of like you're playing in a real war here, the German authorities deemed it like not appropriate for children and juveniles, and they had this like list of things that were forbidden to be sold in Germany, or at least like advertised. And when you can't advertise a game, that's the death of a commercial product. His game got on the index, on that list, and if you look at it nowadays, you're just laughing about it. But at the time, that was the infamy of my first project with Hans Ippisch.
Yeah, what's interesting, Hans, I know that you've been working together again, but we come to that later. But Hans wrote on LinkedIn that that you'd met in August 86 for the first time. And at that time, the Rainbow Arts CEO called him and said he had someone who could make the music for his first game. And of course, that person that he was talking about was you. Can you tell me about your process of writing for a music for a computer game back then, and how that process has changed over the years?
Yeah, I mean, at that time, often the music was not totally tied to like the visuals of a game. It was more like an add-on, and you were just trying to do something cool. So there was often like a counterpoint, I think, in music for a game. But in this case, I did have some thoughts about it. You know, I thought like, okay, this is a soldier game. So maybe we'll start out with some sounds that are a little bit grating and disturbing. So I tried to simulate that with the set chip, and but then it eventually develops a nice melody and things like that. But overall, over the years, it became much more like what you would do in film music, where you look at the visuals and think like, what can I do to support those visuals and hit the right mood here? But in those early days, it was sometimes a free-for-all. You would just do something that was catchy and maybe had a good beat going or something, and really just playing up to the strength of the sound chip. Because that was the other thing. It was very abstract. Even though it was a synthesizer, the sounds were still very abstract. You couldn't simulate an orchestra with it. Even though in our heads, when we heard Sid music, it was almost like a symphony was playing.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. Christmas. And what better way to get into the holiday spirit than with a Minky Couture blanket? Whether you're gathered around the tree with loved ones, roasting marshmallows by the fire, or just looking for a cozy way to stay warm on a chilly night, Minky blankets are the perfect addition to your Christmas festivities. With a wide range of festive designs and colors, you can find the perfect blanket to match your holiday decor or gift to your loved ones. So this Christmas, make your holiday even cozier with a Minky Couture blanket. Head to MinkyCouture.com now and find your perfect blanket just in time for the holiday. Happy Holidays from Minky Couture.
We made USAA insurance for veterans like James. When he found out how much USAA was helping members save, he said,
"It's time to switch."
We'll help you find the right coverage at the right price. USAA. What you're made of, we're made for. Restrictions apply.
Right now at Safeway, earn 4x rewards points when you shop for participating items with Safeway for You. Shop for items like Ready Whip whipped cream, Deer Park natural spring water, Dan and Danimals drinks, Philadelphia cream cheese, and 7-Up to earn 4x rewards points with Safeway for You. Offer expires January 4th. Plus, get select holiday essentials like gift wraps, bags, holiday decor, lights, and more. Buy one, get one 50% off. Restrictions apply. Promotions may vary. Visit Safeway.com or head in store for full offer details.
You mentioned about the gameplay and that you at that point it wasn't really thinking about the gameplay, but today obviously it's different with the different levels. So how do you approach something with the gameplay in mind?
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, I let myself guide by visuals, mostly. I usually get like early versions of graphics or levels to see from a game developer. And I have, of course, like a design document of some sort where you can learn more about the story of the game. And then you or I start thinking about those terms, like what's the emotional component here that the music could support, that kind of thing. But there's still, even to this day, there's sometimes cases where you want to try to counter, to create a counterpoint to the visuals and maybe go in a different direction just to shake things up. But oftentimes it is comparable to film music, where you're trying to match the visuals with the sound.
So when did you get into film music as well? Because you must have had that as an inspiration.
Film music is another passion of me and still a dream, even though I am realistic about it now. It's very, very difficult to break into film music. But yeah, then after my electronic phase came like a long part where I adore and still do like John Williams and Hans Zimmer and all those film composers and what they do with orchestras, and nowadays also often with hybrid orchestration where you have orchestra and electronics and all that stuff. But this movies, particularly Hollywood movies, the big blockbusters, it's this larger than life visuals and experience, and the music is a big part of that. So I dreamt about also breaking into that industry, and it hasn't happened yet. I hope that one of my fans one day will make like a big movie and says, Chris needs to make the music for that. But even if it doesn't happen, so I'm still happy how the career is developing. And I have some outlets, particularly there's a fan of mine who put actually together a symphony concert from my game music. His name is Thomas Berker, and he actually did concerts at the Games Convention in Leipzig. That's how he started. And in 2008, he did a deal with the WDR radio station in Cologne, where they played like a complete concert just with my music. It was actually the first video game concert, I think, even worldwide, that was that was live, played over the radio. So that was an absolute mind-blowing milestone in my career, obviously. And unfortunately, my grandma wasn't alive anymore, but she would have loved to see that. I think all her early doubts would have vanished at that point. And then we did some Kickstarters where we also did orchestra recordings of some other games that I worked on. I couldn't have imagined that in my early days that I would do something like that.
How much of an emotional experience then is it to hear your music played by an orchestra?
It's indescribable. I had tears running my eyes from my eyes the whole time. It was absolutely insane.
Now, you mentioned, obviously, you know, you were talking about film music. I'm a screenwriter, and I sort of understand film music in the way that it can really underline what the story's about, and it can give a slightly different nuance to the story, which is sometimes really exciting. And also, music can ruin a film. It can support a film and make it incredible, but sometimes, right, if it's done badly, it can ruin a film. How can music done badly change the success of a computer game? Can it?
I would imagine so. Luckily, it hasn't happened in my career, but I could certainly. I don't even have like an exact example, but I'm sure there were some games where the music was subpar. But then again, video games are much more interactive. So if the gameplay is still great, the music is shitty, I don't know. I think it could still work. But hopefully teams were like selecting the right partners for the job or something, so hopefully it doesn't happen too often.
If you're not a fan of the game, I don't know if this has happened, if you're not an actual fan of the game that you've got to compose music for, how do you get yourself into that frame of mind to understanding the game well enough to compose the music? Because when I do interviews with people, obviously, there are people that, you know, there are mainly pop stars, but mainly pop stars, they can be pop stars that I've never been really a fan of their music, but I have to put myself and find out things that I really appreciate and understand about them in order to interview them. So how do you do that with a computer game?
Right. There was one example in my Rainbow Arts days. There was a game called Rock and Roll. I'm not really a rock and roll type of fan. So I always found it like very formulaic and kind of like simple, very repetitive, the rock and roll era. In fact, if you like, sometimes you compare two songs and really just the lyrics are different. You could change the background music one-to-one, and I was never like really a lyrics person, probably because I started with those bands like Tangerine Dream that had no lyrics. So even in pop music, I never really paid attention to what they were singing. I was always like about the melody and the background music. So when that rock and roll game project came along, and they wanted to actually have, even though it was like an abstract game, was a marvel that you had to guide through some obstacles and things. They thought it was a good idea because we have that title. We also do like rock and roll soundtrack. And I wasn't really a fan of that. But I still sucked it up, so to speak, and I listened to some rock and roll, and then I did my best to come up with something that worked for the game, and it was actually pretty well received by the press and by the fans. So I can switch that off, my distaste for something, and just work it when I have to.
Is it easier to write the music for a game that you've been involved from the beginning in the development of, that you've been, you know, included in the development of?
It's definitely easier. Yeah.
Why?
If you're brought in late in a project, then it's usually a time crunch. So I prefer much more to be involved in the beginning stages of a game, and then already I can think of some ideas months in advance, and then work them out instead of being like thrown into the fire, so to speak, at the end of a project.
I mean, what guidance are you given in terms of the music, or what restrictions come up?
In the old days, there were a lot of restrictions in terms of like memory and CPU and all that kind of stuff. So you had to work around that. But usually the teams, they nowadays they give me some pointers, but they also trust that I feel out the game and I find something that works for it. And then there's sometimes like a feedback phase, of course, where we talk about it and think, hey, can we improve this or that? Or if I have another idea, bring it up and yeah, let's try this. Definitely, if there's time, that's also another reason why you want to start early, because you can try out different things. And if they don't work, you have time to go in a different direction.
I mean, I think you've done music for over 100 games in your career, which is a massive amount of work, you know, of yes. contribution to that industry, you know. And there are obviously sort of the massive successes, Turrican, Star Wars, the things that have really, you know, been the massive successes in your life. What do you look back on and say, this was the most important development for me in terms of your own development as a musician?
Yeah, definitely in terms of games, it's absolutely the Turrican series. Factor 5 are good friends of mine, and you can even see it today when you go to Gamescom. We have a booth there every time, and the fans are still like, you know, enjoying coming up. It actually has kind of a renaissance right now because they re-released it through Strictly Limited, and so it's also something where I could totally be free in my creativity. It was really the culmination of the years before of studying and self-teaching that culminated in the optimal sound, something that I wanted to do, which is synthesizer music with beats. You know, instead of like going into kind of the ambient things, I wanted to do something that has some beat and drive to it, and the game was perfect for that. And also the technological advancement at the time, because it was those days, you know, with the sound chips, Commodore 64, and then the Amiga computer, they were quite limited. So you on the Amiga, for example, you had four sample voices, and I always thought of ways to enhance that, either by sampling chords and things like that. But also then for Turrican 2, we did this thing where there was this amazing Atari ST programmer called Jochen Hippel, and he was a friend of the company as well. He did like an emulation of my sound player from the Amiga on the Atari ST with the CPU. So I thought like, hey, this player is so powerful. It runs on a 68,000 CPU on the Atari ST. Couldn't we port that back to the Amiga and use that on the CPU to mix four of those channels into one of the Amiga channels, and then keep the other three original Amiga channels as they are. Then you have seven voices to play with. So that was the idea. So he gave me a source code, and I imported it into my player and made that infamous seven voice player that was showcased in Turrican 2. And to this day, that is probably considered one of the coolest pieces by the fans in the history of the Amiga. And so that's definitely my most important thing.
Are you often led by the fact that it seems that this is also about technical developments in allowing something new to be able to be made? Is that something that you're really aware of every time that you get a contract for a new piece of music, that maybe, how can I stretch this? How can I make something new? And absolutely, then you have to look at the technical developments. But that must be quite a lot of pressure, because, you know, I don't know. Maybe you should tell me. Isn't that a lot of pressure?
Of course it is. And I'm actually working on a project right now. I can't name the name. But I'm really trying to do a little bit of a counterpoint to not go with it's kind of a long running franchise. So there's a lot of previous work in this franchise, and I thought, like, let's change this up a little bit, because if you just go back to do the same thing, then you're running the risk of just another one. So I wanted to push the envelope a little bit, and so far the client is happy. So that's something I always try to do, to find an edge.
Now, when you're actually invited to do something like a Star Wars game, which you have been, the John Williams music is obviously incredibly iconic, and that's something that you're going to go and look into. I mean, as a fan of John Williams, I presume you knew all the music in any case, but you're going to go back into and try and understand the nuances of that music. Does that make it harder or easier to actually then contribute new tracks? You know, exactly. I mean, because this is such an iconic figure.
Oh my God, you're definitely hitting a raw nerve there, because that was one of the most daunting and scary projects for me. The reason was that I got invited to do this was that Factor 5, which had moved to the US in 96 to establish a studio there, and they worked closely with LucasArts. They wanted to do this game for the Nintendo 64. Which was the last big game console that had cartridges instead of like a almost unlimited memory CD drive of some sort. So we had to like fit orchestral music with a sound chip, not like as nowadays in the game, you can essentially play a studio recorded music. You have essentially it's something like an MP3 playing in the background, and it maybe gets switched up by the game logic, but it is a piece of music that's recorded in a studio, so I have no limitations. But with this N64, we had a very limited amount of memory, and I think we could, during the game, we could place 14 or 16 voices of sampling. But even the sample memory for those instruments was very limited. To express like a full orchestra with that was an insane undertaking. And that's why they actually brought me over to the US to work on that, because they needed my expertise from my earlier days with the Amiga and pushing the envelope. So, and of course, I was a fan of John Williams, but the tricky part is they wanted me to transcribe about 50% of the music in the game from original John Williams music, and then the other 50% create new music that kind of like matched that style. And then you have to remember, I'm not a classically trained composer, even though I was 2 years of piano music. it was extreme. So I was like sitting there, not only trying to do all the technical difficulties, but also I had my nose in books about orchestration and studied like a maniac on how to balance all the instruments of an orchestra and then squeeze them into like a megabyte of a memory, you know, like having all the strings and all the brass and all the percussions and all the stuff. And so, it was insane. It was absolutely insane. I developed carpal tunnel at the end of that project. Okay. It got better over time again, but it was, And then I remember like a few months into the project, I was invited up to the Lucas Ranch, you know, and they were reviewing my stuff. They were like, oh, does this music from Chris fit with the Star Wars universe? And it was insane, but it all worked out at the end. If after the game was finished, I couldn't listen to it for a year and a half because I thought like I had failed, but the game came out and they kept me there. So I must have done something right. And in fact, we started on working on the follow-up. So like maybe 2 years later, I popped in that cartridge and I thought at that time, with that time had passed, I thought like, okay, you actually did a pretty decent job here.
Do you think a film music composer has it easier than a games music composer? Because you're both dealing with images, you're both dealing with dialogue, but you're dealing with gameplay levels, you know, like, There seems to be additional things that you have to deal with. Do you think, what are the differences and is it difficult or easier?
I do think in some ways film composers have it easier because they usually get like a piece of the film and they compose to the images. They can figure out where to, you know, what happens on the screen and try to match that musically. With games, it's much more interactive. You don't know what the player is doing next. And particularly in a lot of games, it's more like an open world. And even in the Star Wars Rogue Squadron game, we had missions that you had to do, but you were on your own flying around to get to the next point. So we had to actually devise a system where you had areas defined, invisible areas in the game that would then trigger the audio engine to do something with the soundtrack, either switch to another piece or bring in another element, things like that. And that had to also happen fairly seamless. And then you had to also take care of like, what if the player flies along an edge of these defined areas? Would the music just like constantly switch back and forth and create a jarring experience? So we had to account for that. So we had like inner zones and outer zones, you know, like where the inner zone would trigger a new music piece, but it wouldn't fall back until you went again through the edge of the outer zone, which was larger. Things like that you had to think of. And then working all those things, I had to become part-time programmer again at the time to figure that out. And but it was, we got it done. And it's also rewarding once you have finished something like that. You can say, hey, I did it.
Now, I mentioned at the beginning the Computech BAM Awards, which was in 2010, where we met. And that was because of Hans Ippisch, who I think was CEO of Computech at the time. We've also mentioned that one of your early games music was with Hans, an Index game. And lately you've been working with him again. I don't know if it's the game you just talked about that you can't talk much about. What can you say about... Oh, good. Okay. So what can you tell me about the game and the music that you're developing with Hans?
It's another project that is in its infancy, and I haven't seen it. I have seen some early prototypes and things, but it is apparently it's got to do with VR. So you use VR goggles, and it's a game that you actually can play when you're in a vehicle, like a car or a bus or something. And you play the game, and the VR changes according to what the car is doing. So you get like the motion sensations from the car. I don't know how that's going to translate to me if I would get sick playing that, but they're working on it hard, and I will create music for that. So, but I haven't started it yet, so we will see where that leads. But I'm excited to work with Hans again.
I think
the company is called Holoride.
That's right. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, Holoride. That's the.
I mean, that sounds really fascinating because, you know, you must be at a stage of thinking in terms of, okay, you know, just the thoughts going into your head, what can I do with this? In a car or in an enclosed space, the music is very compounded, isn't it? It's very, you know, yeah. So where are your, just out of interest, I know it may come out completely different and you may change all your mind as you go along, but where do your thoughts start on actually development and where are you now?
Yeah, I think I have to see a little bit more of it. I saw some early graphics, but hopefully at some point I can try it out myself to get a feel for it. But immediately I'm thinking like, hey, can the music speed up when the car speeds up? You know, that kind of mindset. So just to see what we can do to enhance the experience.
That's brilliant. I really look forward to this. And I just want to say at the end, because you've had such an enormous contribution to games music over the years, and your wish to be a composer for a Hollywood film and sort of change places, let's say, maybe Hans Zimmer should change places with you for one job.
Do you have some connections? Can you hook me up?
I would absolutely love it if you wrote the score to one of the films that I'm writing at the moment, but it's got to get bought and made, so it's a long process. But okay. That would be absolutely brilliant, and I think what you could contribute to something like that would be something so different and unique to the right style of movie. I'd really love to see that. But I just want to congratulate you on such an immense career. And, you know, you mentioned Hans Zimmer. In a sense, you are the Hans Zimmer of the computer game. So
that's what some people say, yeah. We have a similar path in that we were both growing up near Frankfurt, Germany.
Yeah. One difference, though, there is one difference. He was in the Buggles.
Exactly. Yeah. I think I was a little bit too late for the advancements in pop music. If I'd been born a few years earlier, who knows? I might have had a real synthesizer earlier and maybe would have made a mark in synthesizer or pop music at that time. But on the other hand, it's like I was in the right place at the right time for my career and that thing. And so it brought me to the US. By the way, I also just a few years ago, with my wife, purchased some land in Arizona, and we're in the process of building a house there. And it's pretty amazing. I would have never thought as a teenager where this whole adventure would lead me.
Well, that's a wonderful way to end. I mean, and it's down to your incredible talent. And I must say, and everyone says this, and it's absolutely true. I mean, you are a really nice guy as well. So I can understand why people want to repeatedly work with you over the years, not just because of your talent, because of that as well. And the computer games industry is far bigger than Hollywood. So keep that in mind. Maybe you don't ever need it. That's it. Chris Horsbeck, thank you very much. That was wonderful.
Thanks, Steve.
Up there is an interview I recommend. Down there is where you can find all the podcast interviews, and here is where you can connect.
Right. right now at Safeway, save on all your favorite home scents and cleaning products for a fresh, clean home. Shop for deals on items like Glade candles and plug-ins, Febreze air fresheners, Clorox cleaners, Swiffer wet cloths, or Scotch-Brite sponges. Plus, deck the halls and shop for deals on items like mini light sets, holiday wrapping paper, holiday candles, and holiday cards. Offer expires December 26th. Restrictions apply. Promotions may vary. Visit Safeway.com for full offer details.